Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, November 12, 2020. Former Sudanese rebels meet in South Sudan's Lake State to discuss a recent agreement signed in Juba.
This peace will make a huge progress in the life of the people, mainly in the development and freedom, democracy, and social justice.
And how is the Ethiopian conflict affecting the East African region?
Right now, what we see is more and more fighting, more and more entrenched positions by both sides. Even if the Tigray forces are squeezed and overpowered, you may see a strong resistance, like a guerrilla-type resistance.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Leaders of Sudan's Darfur-based justice and equality movement say they are optimistic the peace deal they signed with Sudan's transitional government will restore peace in their country. GEM leaders are meeting with Darfur residents in Lake State to discuss the agreement signed in Juba more than a month ago. General Ahmed Adam Bakhit, deputy chairperson of the Justice and Equality Movement, says the signed peace deal will change lives of people of Darfur. For VOA News, William Mabor has more from Lake State.
General Ahmed Adam Bakhit, deputy chairperson for the Justice and Equality Movement, says signed peace deal will change the lives of people of Darfur.
This peace will make a huge progress in the life of the people, mainly in the development and freedom, democracy, and social justice, and stability. These parts of life which were in the past absent totally. These aspects will be progressed by signing of this peace.
General Bakhit says he expects the agreement to end the suffering of the Sudanese people, especially those in Darfur. Now that the government and several groups have a signed agreement, General Bakhit says he does not expect any other war to break out in Sudan.
The message to our people be aware of this agreement and to know it well so as to enlighten people and inform them with its details. This will assist in implementation. When all people aware of this agreement, when you are come to the stage of implementation, the matrix of implementation, you will find it easy.
Sadiq Abdul Karim Hamed, the head of GEM's office in Rumbek, says he too is very optimistic the agreement, if implemented, will lead to development in war-affected parts of the country and will improve social justice in Sudan.
In Sudan and South Sudan, we are tired from war. And secondly, this is the only opportunity for all of us to see the window for peace and stability and everlasting peace, not peace like agreement of Addis Ababa or Abuja or Doha. And the good things of that, now we are carrying peace and hope. And this is the only chance all of us we are going forward.
Hamed says GEM leaders chose Rumbek as the venue for holding peace celebrations due to Rumbek's historical role in Sudan's revolution. He says GEM members are comfortable in Rumbek and no longer feel like they are living in a foreign country.
GEM supporters or the GEM members and all the rebel group in the Lake State, they are aware the step of the peace process, and they know and they are supporting us. And even the our community here, the South Sudanese, also they are supporting us. They are happy like us because our pain they are sharing. We are sharing the pain.
Al-Omda Al-Tahir Hamad, an advisor to the head of the GEM, is urging all-out groups, including the SPLM North faction led by Abdulaziz Al-Hilu, to join the peace process.
We had 17 years in rebellion, and because of the peace, we are ready to work with the government in Sudan. I appeal to our brothers Abdul Wahid and Abdul Aziz, who did not sign the recent peace in Juba, to follow the same footstep.
Ahmed thanks the South Sudanese government for mediating the Sudan peace talks in Juba and bringing them to a successful conclusion. For VOA News, I am William Sande Mabur, reporting in Rumbek, Lagos State.
Ethiopia's military conflict with its independent-minded Tigray region has raised fears of civil wars in Africa's second most populous nation. It also raises concerns about regional instability spreading if the conflict continues. Analysts from the region weigh in. Muhammad Yusuf reports for VOA from Nairobi.
The conflict between the Ethiopian government and fighters loyal to the Tigray People's Liberation Front is entering its second week. Some 8,000 Ethiopians have crossed into Sudan for safety, and aid agencies expect more in the coming days. The conflict started when Tigray fighters attacked a federal government position last week in what the government called an attempt to loot weapons and equipment. Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed ordered military action to end the armed uprising. Comfort Ero is the International Crisis Group Africa Program Director.
Right now, what we see is more and more fighting, more and more entrenched positions by both sides. Even if the Tigray forces are squeezed and overpowered, you may see a strong resistance, it's like a guerrilla-type resistance, and that's possible. I don't see the Tigrayans being governed anytime soon from Addis, so we could be very well looking at a long protracted situation.
Tensions have been building since September when Tigray region, one of Ethiopia's 9 regional states, defiantly held a local election after Abiy postponed the polls due to the COVID-19 pandemic. There has been less information coming from the conflict area and difficulty assessing humanitarian needs since the government shut down the internet Wednesday. Thomas Murphy is a sub-Saharan Africa intelligence analyst for the Risk Advisory Group. He says government failure to defeat the Tigray fighters may cause more trouble for the country.
The likelihood of a coup would almost certainly increase if the military fails to defeat the TPLF. And, you know, that would probably come from factions linked to the TPLF who have previously been highly influential in the government. In terms of, I guess, wider implications, Ethiopia is in a very fragile state at the moment. And I think the likelihood or the potential for tensions to escalate or to deteriorate into, I guess, pockets of conflict involving other ethnic actors across the country is probably very high.
On Sunday, the Prime Minister appointed new army chief and intelligence head to lead the war against the Tigray region. Political expert Awol Alo says solving the country's problems through guns could divide the country even further.
You know, this is a highly divided country along ethnic lines. The current constitution provides for people's right to self-determination in the sense of the ability to determine their political and cultural status, but also the right to become an independent state. So the decision of the prime minister to settle a political dispute through an armed confrontation would likely lead to the disintegration of the Ethiopian state into multiple smaller republics. And that, of course, would have a considerable ramification not just for Ethiopia, but also for the Horn of Africa.
In 2019, Abiy won the Nobel Peace Prize for his effort to end Ethiopia's hostilities with Eritrea, bringing political reform to the country and mediating disputes in Sudan, South Sudan, Kenya and Somalia. Abiy has ruled out talks with the Tigray regional leaders, but Ero of ICG says comprehensive national dialogue could save Ethiopia and the region.
The continental body in the form of the African Union, one of the most important allies for the African Union, but also for Ethiopia, the EU, are all on the same page in terms of what needs to be done to prevent this conflict from spiraling out of control and from sucking in the region where we already have, you know, a very fragile transition in Sudan, a country like Somalia, about to turn an important page in its own crisis, South Sudan's very slow transition in its own unity government. So this is not a good time for the Horn of Africa region, with one of its most important pivotal countries now going into a war footing.
The government in Addis Ababa insists the military operation will end when the north of the country is liberated and new leadership is restored in the region. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
And now to politics. The U.S. President-elect Joe Biden continues to lay the groundwork for his new administration as President Donald Trump pressures a flurry of long, short, low seats, challenging the election results in an effort to cling to power. Trump has declined to concede, instead lodging unsupported charges of election fraud that have gained little traction. But the current and future presidents paid tribute to American servicemen on Wednesday for Veterans Day. VOA's White House correspondent Patsy Wida-Kwasara reports.
On Veterans Day in the United States, President Donald Trump laid a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier at Arlington National Cemetery, while President-elect Joe Biden visited the Philadelphia Korean War Memorial. Neither man gave remarks. Trump refuses to concede after last week's presidential election showed Biden to be the projected winner. The president declared on Twitter that we will win. With the state of Alaska being called for Trump, he now has 217 electoral votes, while Biden has 279. A candidate needs a minimum of 270 to win. Three states have not yet been called: Arizona, Georgia, and North Carolina. On top of various legal challenges already filed in several battleground states claiming voter fraud, the Trump campaign has launched a new lawsuit aiming to block certification of the election results in Pennsylvania. Paul Schiff Bergman is a professor of law at George Washington University Law School.
It is possible that if they kick up enough dust and enough allegations and uncertainty, that they could potentially convince Republican-controlled legislatures to seat a rival slate of electors that are opposite of what the votes in the state and the voters in the state called for. That would be an extraordinarily extreme step. It would really be a coup against the American people and a destruction of the democratic process.
Meanwhile, two states are headed for a recount, Wisconsin and Georgia. Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger.
With the margin being so close, it will require a full by-hand recount in each county. This will help build confidence. It will be an audit, a recount, and a re-canvass all at once.
The Trump campaign celebrated the announcement with campaign communications director Tim Murtaugh saying, "This is an important first step in the process to ensure that the election was fair and that every legal vote was counted." So far, none of the legal challenges mounted by the Trump campaign has succeeded in providing evidence for their claim of ballot count fraud, something Democrats are eager to point out.
We are a week out, and the president is still desperately searching for evidence of fraud. He won't find it because it doesn't exist.
Even if Trump is successful in some of his lawsuits and recount demands, analysts say it's unlikely to overturn Biden's victory. Republican strategist Rob Stutzman.
It does appear reasonable what the media, both the left-leaning and right-leaning media, have concluded, that it is impossible for Trump to make up the deficit he now faces in key states like Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Nevada.
By law, state electors have to formally cast their votes for president and vice president in mid-December. Patsy Wida-Kwasara, VOA News.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, medical professionals talk about a new COVID-19 vaccine. Find out more after this break.
Wow. What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what kinds of infrastructure improvements are the biggest priority in your community?
I would like my roads to be improved because we are not comfortable with the roads.
I think it is hospital. It's hospital because I'm seeing people suffering with their kids, even mothers, they are suffering when they are pregnant.
Park where children can play and where adults can also meet to hang out will be a big improvement.
For the government to do the street so that when people are driving, their cars cannot be bumping and all over. And the gutters as well. The gutters are full of rubbish and then it's choke as well. If they can clear the dirty things out, it will be perfect.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA Health Correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the coronavirus pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and noses when we are in crowded areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. As we reported Monday, a vaccine for the coronavirus has proved 90% effective after early trials. That's according to its developers, Pfizer and BioNTech. It's raising hopes that the global corona pandemic can be brought under control in the coming months. But as Henry Ridgewell reports from London, the nature of the vaccine means less developed health systems face major challenges in rolling out any inoculation programs.
The Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine trial is still in its early stages, but scientists say results so far from 44,000 volunteers show the virus can be beaten. The vaccine is based on new so-called mRNA technology and is yet to be approved by regulators. Even if it's fast-tracked, there are other challenges.
There are big manufacturing challenges. There are logistics challenges. This vaccine needs to be stored at minus 80 degrees Celsius.
That's more feasible in richer nations. But in poorer countries, rolling out a vaccination program won't be easy. At this clinic in Burkina Faso, the fridge regularly breaks down, forcing staff to throw away the medicines inside. The United Nations says health systems that serve two-thirds of the world's population don't have adequate refrigeration facilities.
So if today we had to vaccinate against the coronavirus, for example, we would need a lot more refrigerators to keep the vaccines. We don't have these fridges.
Then there's the problem of power.
The hot climate means that the cooling devices are more important and have to work harder. It's a lack of electricity. It's developing economy. So if you look in a number of these markets, you can find areas where countries where perhaps 30, 40% of the health centres don't have access to electricity.
The United Nations Children's Fund spent $85 million in 2019 on refrigeration equipment, mostly solar-powered refrigerators in Africa and Asia. It's also stockpiling syringes and developing cold chain storage and transportation ahead of any vaccine approval. But in many countries, scientists say the health infrastructure simply doesn't exist to roll out any rapid coronavirus inoculation program. An added challenge is getting people to clinics or visiting them in the community and persuading them the vaccine is safe. The Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine requires two doses per person. Then there's the danger of vaccine nationalism, the concern that rich countries buy up all the vaccines for their own populations. Over 150 countries have signed up to a global facility called COVAX to try to ensure equitable distribution.
With the goal being to help produce 2 billion doses of various COVID vaccines that could be distributed to all of these countries around the world by the end of 2021.
Scientists say other coronavirus vaccines currently in trials also could prove effective, boosting hopes of large-scale inoculation programs. But they warn until such programs are rolled out, it's vital that governments and individuals continue to try to suppress the spread of the virus as infection rates continue to soar. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Still on COVID-19, the news of a vaccine has renewed hope for a light at the end of the pandemic. Pfizer's work is only one of the several scientific efforts worldwide to develop an effective COVID-19 vaccine. VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with Dr. Jesse Goodman, professor of medicine and infectious diseases at Georgetown University in Washington, who says he is encouraged by the announcement, but says there is still some work to be done.
I think it is very promising and exciting, but there's just really minimal data at this point. Pfizer has just basically issued a press release from the early part of its clinical trial.
What is Pfizer actually saying?
What they are saying is that comparing a group of recipients in the trial, one who got the vaccine, another who got the placebo, that receiving the vaccine reduced the frequency of illness by about 90% or more. It's a pretty small amount of data, but it's extremely promising so long as it's all confirmed.
Where are the major gaps in our understanding of this vaccine?
A big thing we don't know is how long will this protection last. Also, the company did not report any details, including on safety. They stated that they've been told there were no significant safety concerns or signals, but we still don't have information reported on that. And for them to have the minimum that FDA would require, even for an emergency use authorization, which is far short of an approval, they're going to need several weeks more data. But all those things said, what it does convincingly tell us is that a vaccine designed in this way to get the body to react to what's called the spike protein of the coronavirus can help protect us against future illness. So that's a major step forward. It suggests that other vaccines, which are in testing based on the same principle against the same virus protein, sort of raises our hopes for their success.
Johnson & Johnson, I know, is a major player.
That vaccine, as well as AstraZeneca's, are based on using other viruses, in this case a harmless virus, and substitute it for the gene for the spike protein. But essentially, it does the same thing. It's using a harmless virus to make this protein, which the body then reacts to and remembers. The other more traditional candidates, like particularly the recombinant proteins that are made in a factory, but sort of in the same way. The genes are put into bacteria or yeast or insect cells or whatever, and the protein is made in the factory rather than in the body from the RNA. Those are in many, many approved vaccines using technologies and approaches that have been around for a long time and that are tried and true. They're slower, but they're more certain.
And globally, many of these competing companies are cooperating with each other.
There already is a lot of collaboration, and we can't predict which vaccine may be best among all these, whether there may be certain vaccines that are better for certain populations, like the elderly. That's one of the reasons it's super important that these clinical trials get completed, so we have a good understanding of every one of these promising vaccines, and then understand how they compare to each other and what's best for what population.
How does this timeline compare with the H1N1 response that you oversaw when you were the chief scientist at the FDA under President Obama? H1N1, of course, is a form of influenza or the flu.
In 2009 with H1N1, it was similar or shorter, but we knew we were just making another influenza vaccine. So even though it was a unique strain, we could use the technologies and the manufacturing processes that had been in use for 40 plus years and have a lot of confidence in that. We didn't know how many doses it would take or what dose, but we knew what could help protect people against disease. With this, to go from discovering a brand new disease and just having the gene sequence, let's say, in January, to having data in November suggesting we have an effective vaccine, that is extraordinary. We have a long way to go, but I think this gives an indication of the promise of some of these new technologies and what the world can do working together when they're determined.
That's Jesse Goodman, professor of medicine and infectious disease at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. He spoke with my colleague, Adam Phillips.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease Control. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
That's all we prepared for you this Thursday, when I leave you with the song Bira Bira by Unique Arafati.
Yeah! Dala Lele Unique Arafati! Futuring Kodi Kodi Mash! Bira Bira! I'll see you! Bira Bira! Fetisu! Bira Bira! Itabiligo! 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 Ya hajanga jero fi dunia de kita la mine ko tarabuna Ageni Bira! Fetisu Bira! Rabuna takio buwe dileta Mata ali gugeli bataki fom fom Mata silu iya haja guam guam Ageni Bira! Fetisu Bira! Rabuna takio buwe dileta Bira Bira! Fetisu! Bira Bira! Bira bira, itabiligo. Bira bira, fetisu. Bira bira, itabiligo. Bira bira, fetisu. Bira bira, itabiligo. Ngachi ne kimadoso wadono ya. Keri luri gasi, mililiaro, yomotuliaro. Alu mirokozo damiri, lialiaro, mili, lialiaro, mili, lialiaro. Milia, lia lia romio suda. Bira bira, fetisu. Bira bira, itabiligo. Bira bira, fetisu. Bira bira, itabiligo. Bira bira, fetisu. Bira bira, itabiligo. Bira bira, fetisu. Bira bira, itabiligo.
Mata kunta ma bira bira, itabiligo. Mata shilu iya ja guam guam Kene bira, fetis bira, fakir bira Robuna taki buwa dileta Iya ja talamin, guwa bito Selilo, fakirlo Mata kutu galbak bata Die hard, wakad Everything gonna be right Yo, I'll be them set, no bank it
Bira bira, fetisu Bira bira, itabiligo Bira bira, fetisu Bira bira, itabiligo Bira bira, fetisu Bira bira, itabiligo Bira bira, fetisu Bira bira, itabiligo
We've been listening to Unique Arafati with the song Bira Bira. I'm John Tanz in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not leave your house without wearing a mask. Stay inside quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Keys Records.
Bira bira, fetisu, bira bira, itabiligo. Bira bira, fetisu, bira bira, itabiligo. Bira
birabira fetisu birabira itabiligo birabira fetisu birabira itabiligo mata ali gungeli bataki fom fom mata silu iya hajago.